You're listening to KX93.5 FM.
FM. 4, 3, 2, 1.
It's time for the Friendship Show.
Friendship Show.
With your hosts, Dawn Price, Mark Miller, and Scott Hayes. The Friendship Show.
Friendship Show.
Friendship Show.
Good morning, and welcome to the Friendship Show. Here on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. My name is Mark Miller, and I'm here with my co-hosts who are, they're settling in. Everyone's gathering around the table. Scott Hayes is here this morning. Good morning, Mr. Hayes.
Good morning, Mark. Good to see you back, by the way. Good to hear your voice.
Oh, thanks. You too.
It's been
a while. You did a rebroadcast show.
Now, why'd you have to point that out?
Well, I point that out because I was coming to work today, minding my own business, and you jumped out from behind some car and scared the daylights out of me.
It was like a shot of coffee, though, wasn't
and
it?
And I said, it was nothing like a shot of coffee.
Oh, okay.
And I said, shouldn't you be hosting a radio show right now?
Yes, and Robert's out of town, so we had to rebroadcast the past show with famed art forger Tony Tetro.
Yeah, I love Tony Tetro.
He's great. He's a very interesting guy.
Character.
Yeah, I don't know how much of him I believe, but...
I don't know about that. Dawn Price is here this morning.
I'm here. Hello.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm good.
Yeah?
I'm energized. We had a great meeting last night.
We did. Do you want to talk about that? We held a town meeting last night to talk about permanent supportive housing and our proposal in front of the city council on April 22nd.
And we have actually on our website, KX93.5, The Friendship Show, there's a great podcast of our conversation last week on the proposal. But... We talked further about that last night in person with about 40 people, and it was a great conversation.
It was a nice turnout of people.
I was surprised, 7 o'clock on a Friday
on
night.
On a Friday.
People are interested in this.
Yes. And I would say my takeaway from that forum, and I didn't get a chance to really talk with you afterwards, so I'm wondering if you had the same takeaway, that people were genuinely interested and not trying to find ways as to why this project wouldn't work in Laguna Beach, but trying to identify what issues could possibly prevent it and how to resolve those issues. It was a real problem solving.
Yeah, it really was. And people were, I think you're exactly right. The concerns that were raised in a way of how are we gonna work through this? Not in any sort of an antagonistic way. And I've been really pleasantly surprised that this has been a good community conversation with people who may differ, but at the same time are very respectful of each other's points of view.
Yes. Yeah. I would say one of the people who was in the room last night, who has a real vested stake in how this project would come together, said to me, we need both of these things. We need what you do, and we need what I do, and
right.
We have to figure out how we can coexist in the same community.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's exciting.
Yeah, I was very, very, very pleased to hear that. So onward and upward.
Yep, we're moving along. Everyone should keep April 22nd on their calendar and come to the city council meeting to talk about, to hear our proposal and to lend their support, we hope.
It'll be a big night.
Yep.
Big night.
Big night. Today's big, too.
Today is big. We have...
May I interrupt? What time is that on April
22nd? 6:30 on the 22nd.
Okay.
And we don't know where we are on the agenda, but our website for the proposal is friendsofsupportivehousing.org, and all of that information will be on the website as we know it.
And I would say we need people to sign that online petition.
Oh, absolutely. Please go to that.
Yeah, to put their name on. So friendsofsupportivehousing.org.
Or com.
Or com. Oh,
it
you
works.
Can do either?
Either way.
Oh, that makes
sense. We go
easy.
Both ways.
Go there, look it up, put your name on the petition.
Please.
Get on board.
Yep.
All right. This morning, we have two of the movers and shakers in the local cultural scene. Two of my favorite people, one I've known for a long time, and the other is sort of a new friend. So this morning, we have Ava Burton is here this morning.
Hello.
Oh, hi, she's Ava. She's online.
Yay.
Good morning.
Morning.
How are you?
Did I jump in too quickly?
No. Well, you know.
So it's just normally when I'm here with Jason, he's not got my mic on.
Oh, really? But you're just eye candy in the studio?
No. What are you doing? No, at this point, he's normally going, oh, hang on, I don't know which button to press.
We should let folks know that Ava is the better half of the Jason Fetty, Ava Burton family.
Absolutely.
Jason is one of our regular hosts of KX93.5.
Absolutely. Good to see you. Ava's been on the show. She's sort of a frequent guest. We love it when she's on.
She's like a co-host or a featured player of some sort.
Well, does my wage go up now? I've got that title.
Absolutely. Put that on your resume.
We will double what we've been paying you.
Thank you.
You're
Put
welcome.
That on your resume. Also with us this morning is Lauren Lojo Simon. Good morning, Lauren.
Hello.
How are you?
I wish I sounded like Ava.
Oh, really?
Doesn't she have a lovely voice?
Everyone wishes.
Everybody says
like
that. Everybody wants to sound like Ava. And isn't that interesting? Because lots of times, she spends a lot of time trying not to sound like her. Isn't that true?
It is true, yes.
All right. Lauren and Ava are here because we're working on a little cultural project coming up in the future where we're going to produce an evening of theater. So we wanted to talk about that this morning, learn a little bit more about Lauren, check in with Ava, and see how things are going. But I think we're going to take a music break.
Okay.
And then come back a little bit.
Yeah, and when we come back, is it correct to say, Mark, that you are part of this production that we're going to be discussing?
Yes.
Yeah, so you're going to be a
guest. He's going to be wearing...
You're going to switch between guest and host.
He's going to be wearing boxers, I hear, for this performance.
I believe so.
Yep.
You know, you gotta give the people what they want.
So
I'm not sure if those two things go together. We'll take a musical break and we'll be right back.
All right.
All right.
Like a bluebird with his heart removed, lonely as a tree. I've run just as far as I can run. If I never see we'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Friendship Show here on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. My name is Mark Miller. I'm here with my co-host, Dawn Price, Scott Hayes. We're talking with Lauren Lojo-Simon and Ava Burton this morning about a new cultural event coming up in Laguna Beach in May, I believe. Didn't we schedule this in May?
May 15, 16.
Awesome. Here's what I wanted you guys to know. Lauren Simon, sort of the reason that this collaboration, I think, came to be is because, as people may know, Ava and I have produced and performed a couple of fun little things that we did in Laguna Beach.
Fun? They were awesome.
Thank you for saying so.
They were. It's a new theatrical voice in Laguna Beach. The two of you have been in the two productions you've done so far.
Yeah. We liked it.
Yeah. It was great. Sold out.
Ava's nodding her head.
Sorry.
Like that helps in radio.
Each of them sold out.
They did. But somewhere along the way, and help me with this, Ava, somewhere along the way, we met Lauren.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't even remember how, to tell you the truth.
Through Annie.
Through Annie Warren.
Oh, no, Lauren invited us to read at a play reading. Your group of playwriters.
Right, I teach a 10-minute playwriting class at the Playhouse and needed actors for our final performance. And I think Annie suggested Ava, who suggested you.
That's how I get all of my jobs, is that people really want Ava. And then Ava's like, could you throw a bone to my friend Mark? I get a lot of jobs that way.
Wait, back up, though. A 10-minute playwriting class, is that writing?
The class is not 10 minutes.
Writing plays that last 10 minutes? Or
yes.
Writing short, plays in 10 minutes?
Short-form playwriting.
Oh, awesome. Mm-hmm.
Which is great because you don't need to be a writer or even a theatrical person to produce, to be able to write a 10-minute play in 8 weeks.
Wow.
And have it performed.
But is it like, I was an English major and I was a creative
writer. We'd love you in the class.
Well, I'm not asking for myself. I'm just, what's the widely accepted thing about writing literature is that it's much harder to write the short story than the novel because it has to be condensed. Do you think that's true of plays?
Well, that's why I help people, you know, give them the format and a structure, and we generally limit it to two characters.
Got
and
it.
You would be surprised at the amazing works that people come up with in such a short time.
Very cool.
This sort of gets produced. Then you produce all these students' plays at the end of the class?
We do a reading.
You do a reading of the play?
Mm-hmm. And we bring in professional actors like Mark and Ava.
Right.
And we do a night of shorts.
Well, that sounds like something I'd like to do. When's the next one?
I don't know yet.
Okay. Because you'd probably enjoy that too, no?
Yeah, let's do it together.
I think it'd be a lot of fun.
I would totally do that.
Okay, I'm in.
And next you've been talking about that you want to write stage play.
That's right, yeah.
You even have a couple of ideas.
I do, yeah. I've already started some over the years. So.
Do you want to say what they are?
No.
You had a couple of pretty good ideas, didn't you?
Well, I don't know.
All right. Well, there you go.
It's
a great introduction to writing because after 8 weeks, you're like, oh my God, I wrote a play. And it's people laughed or people cried or whatever they did, you know, in the audience.
And then to hear people like Ava and Mark to kind of, you know, read it, I think would be the most interesting part of that process in the end, I guess, ultimately, yeah. I would love to do that. Yeah, we're in. Done.
All right.
Okay. All right. Don't you find, Lauren, as a playwright, the first time that you really do hear an actor speak the words, it changes it in your head because you have no idea how it's going to exist in a room until it's actually there. It's all just something on paper and in your head.
It's so thrilling. It's so much fun to do that. To write something and then hear it read and then be able to work with the actors and, you know, they're interpreting it one way and you're like, that's not what I meant. And then you realize that's because that's not what you wrote. And it's a great opportunity to revise. And, I mean, you and I know that from our project.
What's one of the biggest hurdles the first-time playwright has to overcome in that 10-minute play that they end up writing? What's the biggest struggle that a writer faces there?
They don't have enough conflict. When you have a 10-minute play, you have about a page, maybe a page and a half to do the setup, and then you have to introduce a real conflict between the characters that has to be, if not resolved, at least you have to come to some kind of satisfactory ending mm-hmm. in 10 pages, mm-hmm. figuring a page a minute.
Yeah.
So you have to get into it fast. You have to set up a conflict that we really care about mm-hmm. And then wrap it all up. And there's no room for error.
Yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. And I suspect when you write something down, you had mentioned earlier, your intention as a writer is far different than how somebody may interpret what you've written. And that's part of the learning process, I guess, you'd go through in your class, right?
Right. We love to workshop. We read everything out loud among ourselves mm-hmm. every week. So we'll have the first 2 or 3 weeks is more instructional on a new class with some exercises on how to develop character and conflict. And then we workshop for the rest of the time. So we go around and read each other's plays and talk about them. But none of us are actors, so it mm-hmm. just... It amps it up when we actually get actors working on it.
And is there that character arc in a 10-minute play?
There is.
There is. Wow, beautiful.
It's what makes the play complete, right? The characters have to start as one person and then end somewhere else.
Well, as opposed to a 10-minute scene from something longer where you don't have those same parameters.
Mm-hmm. And your project, this leads very well, is a project of shorts that you're going to be doing in May.
It is.
Correct?
Yes.
This is very cool.
What is the project?
I believe the project is called Mark and Ava in Shorts.
Okay.
And that's thus the boxer shorts. And Ava's going to be in shorts too.
Boxer shorts, Ava?
Yes. Well, cami knickers and shorts.
I love the play on words, and the poster is very funny with the.
I've seen it.
Mark Miller and Ava Burton in shorts.
Oh, how funny.
And but these are short plays.
And they all do contain shorts.
Some of them will contain actual
shorts.
Oh, we will actually be
garments
shorts.
That are shorts. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a play on words.
Let's get back then to the origins of this concept of Mark and Ava in shorts. How did that sort of come about? Was it a night of heavy drinking or something?
No, heavens.
Heavens, no.
Heavens, no. We, Ava and I... read these plays from Lauren's class, and I was really sort of very impressed with Lauren's sort of insight and ability to navigate these scripts and to understand the process and all of those sorts of things. And at the end of the evening, Lauren was going to stage part of a play where, what was the name of that play?
Adoration of Dora.
Adoration of Dora. And Dora is Pablo Picasso's...
She was a surrealist photographer and Pablo Picasso's lover. And this was an excerpt of a piece that we did on Forest Avenue in an art gallery.
And the premise of the play, though, was that there's like 5 or 6 actresses all play the same character.
2 actors play Dora Maar, and the other 4 actors play all sorts of other characters.
Oh, do they? Okay. Apparently I wasn't paying attention.
You didn't understand it, did you?
I did. Well, no, and that's the thing is that, so first of all, you know.
But it was a theatrical experience.
It was. It was a great theatrical experience.
We were there, and I said, you know, that's very smart writing, and it's a very interesting convention. And frankly, it's all above my head. I don't understand a thing about it, but I find it all terribly interesting. And we should see if Lauren would like to do something with us. And that's really how this came to be, yeah?
Yes. So I went from high art to low art.
Right, exactly.
So you lowered yourself to work with Mark and Ava.
We're doing comedy.
Yeah. And then we said, we'd love to work with you. Do you write anything where people fall down a lot and wear funny things on their head? Because that's sort of what we do.
Yes, and then I went to see them in Reindeer Monologues and had so much fun that we decided we wanted to do something together.
This is so great.
So how many shorts are there? Are they all comedy?
They're all comedy. Mm-hmm. They're all on the theme of love.
Okay.
And we have 2 10-minute plays, 2 monologues, and 1 20-minute play.
And thematically, do the shorts all kind of come together at the end, or are they actually separate shorts?
They're
entirely
separate stories.
Gotcha.
Completely separate stories, but thematically they're linked.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting, yeah.
All somewhat on the theme of relationships and love and sort of span a variety of age groups and things like that.
When you were writing, did you write with these 2 actors in mind, or did you already have these sort of plays written down?
These No, I didn't write these specifically for this, mm-hmm. and they're not all written by me.
Mm-hmm.
But
some are written by students?
Some are written by just other playwrights that
okay.
I know.
Okay.
And but we were when we put together the program, we looked at a variety of plays, and Mark and Ava read out loud several other plays, and we just tried to find a good combination of materials that would show their range as actors and would work thematically and would sort of fit in a reasonable amount of time.
Mm-hmm. And how far along are you in the process then? Are you actually rehearsing now, Ava?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you and Mark seem to have great, I mean, because I went to your last performance, the Reindeer Monologues. You guys seem to have great rapport on stage, yes?
Well, actually,
yeah. Well, we don't really know.
We don't know because, because the first play we did, although we were sat next to each other on the stage, theatrically, we weren't in the same room. We weren't in the same, so we didn't actually play opposite each, you know, we didn't bounce off of each other.
This was Love Letters we're talking about now?
We touch each other in this play.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. This is where we find out actually Mark and I have no stage chemistry.
Love Letters. Love Letters. From an audience perspective, in Love Letters, you were sort of bouncing off each other, even though the convention is that you're not in the same
right.
room. But then Reindeer Monologues, of course, they...
We weren't. They were monologues.
They were monologues, so they weren't on stage at the same time.
I would say in the process so far, I mean, we had a rehearsal the other day, and the playwright, director, Lojo Simon, said, oh, I hope you didn't memorize anything because I've made some changes. I haven't worked in that sort of process in a while where you have the playwright right there with you and you can say, you know, what does this mean? And this doesn't seem to be working really well. Or the playwright saying, you know, I'm looking at that and it's not what I intended, and so I'm going to make some adjustments to the script. And
I know, it's a joy, isn't it? Because usually you find a line that you just can't get, but you have to make it fit because the playwright isn't there to say, mm-hmm. oh, I'll change that for you then.
So it does become a real collaborative process because you have the playwright right there. Do you think, though, Ava, because you're a classically trained actress and have performed, you know, sort of the iconic stage pieces of, you know, of history.
Yes.
What is it like for you as an actress to have this material where you don't have anything to go from? You know, there's not books written about it. There's not insight written about it. You haven't seen other productions of it. It's just there on the page. Is that...
No, I always do it from the same place inside me.
Do you?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean... excuse me, I can't go and ask Shakespeare what he meant. Mm-hmm. And you can look at the cliff notes, but ultimately they're just people. You know, if I don't understand a line, then obviously I'd have a little research
right.
and have a look. But ultimately, they're just people with the same feelings as me.
So you just go, these are the words on the page.
These are the
This is what I'm going to deal with, and I'm going to take it all from here.
Yeah.
And do you approach it differently, Mark?
I would have to say that I think, because I sort of came from like a school in a place where kind of like American plays, you know, written around, you know, that period from like 1965 to the early 80s. And I think, to me, I think in American playwriting, and certainly the last 20 years, Lauren has an MFA in playwriting, so she can help me or correct me, that there's been sort of like a real change in the kind of the structure and the convention of American theater, and where dialogue in plays used to be, you know, much more, I think, lengthy. And it was much more, to me, focused on the spoken word and putting together sentences. And a lot of American theater now is much shorter repartee between characters and... involves more elements of performance. Yes? No? Make any sense?
I think it's a style thing. I mean, currently I think naturalistic plays are very popular, in which people interrupt each other just as you would in a natural conversation, as opposed to presentational plays. The piece I did on Dora Maar was much more presentational.
You're right. That's true. That was more presentational. I think, do you think, like, to me it's like in American theater... playwrights like David Mamet and Sam Shepard, and they really sort of changed, to me, the way plays were written in America. Yeah? No? She's like, yeah, they're not my favorites.
This feels like an exam.
Do you have a playwright that you admire?
I have several that I admire. But I'm still working with my own voice as a playwright, and I don't, when I'm writing, I don't generally read plays if I don't have to. And I also draw inspiration from visual art and poetry. I'm interested in the sound of the language, the rhythm of it. So listen to a lot of music when I'm writing, and then also just take situations either that I've witnessed or pieces of my own life, or as I told you recently, you know, dreams that I've had, things like that, as my inspiration, rather than trying to mimic. Although I do have plays that mimic other playwrights, just because it's a good way to learn as well. Right.
Mm-hmm. Can we take one of the 10-minute plays or the shorts that you've created for Mark and Ava, and can you just sort of outline briefly, conceptually, what it is, just so we have a sense of what we would be walking into when we go see the performance end of this month or next month? Can you do that?
May 15th and 16th, about a month away.
Well, we can read from some.
Well, that'd be wonderful. Do you want to come back?
Should we take a music break and come back and do some reading?
Let's do that. I'd love that.
Ava, you down?
I'm down.
That's why she's here. She's ready to go.
All right.
Well,
KX93.5, Laguna's only FM. This is the Friendship Show. And what are we going to hear?
We're going to hear Long Cool Woman with a Black Dress by the Hollies.
Awesome.
Saturday night, I was downtown.
We're back. It's KX93.5, The Friendship Show. We are here with Scott Hayes, our co-host.
Yes.
And our guests, really, now, we're going to switch Mark Miller to guest mode because he's about to perform. We have Lauren Simon, the playwright, and Ava Burton. And we're talking about a production coming up in May 15th and 16th, featuring short plays and monologues by Lojo Simon and others, directed by Lojo Simon and featuring our own Mark Miller and Ava Burton. The name of this evening of theater is Mark Miller and Ava Burton in Shorts. And the play on words, of course, is the short plays, as well as we might actually see a little leg.
Woo! That'd be worth the price of the ticket just
there
to see Mark's
legs.
There you
go, right there. But we've asked Mark and Ava to read. Do you want to, Lauren, you want to introduce this?
Yeah, they're going to read the beginning of a short piece called In Fine Feather. And I wrote this originally to submit to a Noel Coward writing contest. Mm. So it's in the style of Noel Coward.
Mm, awesome.
But it's kind of set locally.
Are you ready, sir?
Are you ready?
And I'm ready.
All right.
Oh, have you got more to say, Lauren?
I just didn't know if there was an intro that needed to be read. Is that enough information? Should we tell them what? Should I read the stage direction?
Sure.
Yeah. It's part of her job. She reads the stage directions for us.
Okay, so this is set in the bedroom of a married couple named Fred and Candy. It's a fancy house. He is wearing a Hawaiian shirt and flip-flops, and he is getting ready for an event. She is in her undergarments, and she is also trying on jewelry and clearly getting ready for a party.
Are you wearing that?
Why not?
It's dressy casual.
Well, that's what I am, dressy and casual.
That's just casual.
It's coastal casual.
Coastal casual is Cucinelli Bahamas and Dingman Crocs, not board shorts and flip-flops.
What's the difference?
About $1,200.
What are you wearing?
I haven't decided. This or this?
Well, both seem dressy, but not very casual.
Well, women have to try harder.
You don't, darling. You're stunning, no matter what you wear.
Don't be sarcastic.
I'm not.
Then it's sweet of you to think so.
I do. You're very attractive for your age.
If only I could say the same about you.
Then I'll have to make more of an effort.
You might start by covering your legs.
What's wrong with my legs?
Nothing if you're poultry. Your scaly yellow skin sags like an old chicken.
I am an old chicken.
You should change.
And see.
Yay!
How
fun
was that?
To hear more.
Yeah.
That's the point.
Is that one of yours that you wrote?
It is.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Beautiful. What was the inspiration? I mean, how do you come up with an idea to write sort of a short play like this? Just comes out?
I have no idea.
Yeah? You just sit down and do it?
Yeah,
10 minutes?
Usually I'm just interested in a subject or a scenario or characters. I mean, it really varies. When I was doing this one at the Playhouse, we were in rehearsal for a Noel Coward piece called Fallen Angels, and so I was just sort of very much
in that mode,
in the ambiance of that.
Uh-huh. Do you, I'm sorry to interrupt real quickly, though. Do you go through a lot of revision? Do you go through a lot of rewriting, or do you just sort of
all the time?
All the time?
All the time.
And
it's
so
all
how
about rewriting.
It's all, yeah, rewriting is rewriting, right? Yeah. So how long would it take you to produce, or let me rephrase, how long would it take you to write this 10-minute play that you did in terms of just a week, 2 weeks, over a month? How does that work for you?
It often feels like you're never finished.
Okay, well, that's true. Yeah.
I was going to say, she's still writing it. Because as we're rehearsing, she's like, oh, no, I'm just going to change that.
Yeah. And as you hear the performances, that gets you thinking differently, yeah?
Right.
Yeah.
Isn't that? Because, again, when we were rehearsing the other day, and we were rehearsing this entire piece, and there's some very funny stage business that happens in the course of this play, and it is sort of very much has that sort of like English farce sort of thing about it. But as we're going through it, we're just sort of looking at the mechanics of it and going, well, that's a wonderful thing to say in a script. It's not possible to stage it. And so perhaps we have to take that idea and then figure out, again, how can you make this live in a space? Because people are going to have to actually
a low-budget space.
Right.
I was
going to
say,
exactly.
Not on our budget. Yeah. We can't produce that.
Maybe
no.
You could, because what is it? What was the thing? I know.
We can't talk about that.
Oh, we can't?
No.
Oh, not at all?
That's all
right. The thing.
Oh, you must pay for tickets on May 15th and 16th to find out what the thing is.
Well, I will tell you this. In that piece, Ava has a very funny costume piece of business that if we can pull it off, will be very funny.
Yay.
Is it like a wardrobe malfunction or something? Or?
Stop digging. We're not telling.
Okay. I'm just trying to raise the interest of the people listening.
May 15th and 16th.
Let me ask you, the performance is where, by the way?
Oh, BC Space.
That's beautiful there. I love that.
Mark Chamberlain, once again.
The exclusive performance space for Mark and Ava.
And that seats probably 50, 60? How many would you say sit in there?
I think if we got 50 people in there, we'd be happy.
I think we'd be very warm if we had 50 people in there. Yeah. I think 40.
It's a great space for this kind of theater, though, because you're very intimate. You're kind of part of, you feel like you're sitting in the room with these people.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you are.
I mean, you pretty much have to
crawl over the top of you to get to the stage.
The scene that you just read, I can imagine feeling like you're
in the room,
you know, sort of sitting in the corner of someone's bedroom and watching this happen.
This is, you know, it reminds me of, I was in New York one time and I was walking down the street and all of a sudden for like $40, you could see, what's her name? That famous Jewish funny girl who used to be on Roseanne, Sandra.
Bollocks?
I want to say Bernhardt.
Sandra Bernhardt was doing a one-woman show in New York. It was $40. It was in this tiny little space. And so I'm like, yeah, I'm in. So we're doing all of this, and I'm watching it, and it was a great show, and she was fantastic and very Sandra Bernhardt-y. And then at the end of the show, I realized that her big dramatic entrance is that she's going to walk through the crowd, and she's going to exit at the back of the theater. The theater is very small, and I'm sitting in front of the door that leads out. And so there was this fantastically awkward moment where Sandra Bernhardt walks up to me and basically straddles my lap and says, excuse me, I need to get to the door.
Brushes with greatness with Mark Miller.
Sandra, please, let me get out. Lovely show, Sandra. Lovely show.
Does the space inform what you do? When you're in that intimate of a performance space where you realize your audience is going to be right there, does it change stage direction? Does it change choices you make as you're preparing?
It's informed the choice we've made of pieces that we perform, because Lauren's got a great piece, a full-length play that we'd love to do, but it's not... It's possible to do it there, but it wouldn't do the piece justice.
Got it.
Oh my God, somebody's Skyping me.
Oh my.
It's my mother.
Oh my!
Play the record.
Answer.
Put her on.
Well, by all means, answer. Your mother lives in England.
She does.
What time is it there? Tell her to go to bed.
it's 5:40 in the evening.
Oh, funny.
I think in the staging of this evening, I think one of the decisions that we've sort of played with is not trying to hide the fact that this is a small room and everything is very intimate, and we'll probably do all of our set changing and costume changing right in front of the audience.
Yes.
Yes, you've already seen us in our shorts. So.
Right, exactly. So it does inform the decisions that you make, but I think that sort of what makes theater interesting is that, well, this is what we can do in this room, and how creative can you be with those sorts of things?
I definitely think it's what makes theater in that space interesting. Yeah. And if people are listening and didn't see Reindeer Diaries and didn't see Reindeer Monologues and didn't see
Love Letters,
this is an opportunity to see a very unique performance space, and it lends itself to a really nice evening.
Yeah, Mark Chamberlain has been very kind and very generous with us, so we're happy to be going back there. Lauren, this is playwriting is it fair to say almost a second career for you? Because
it is.
You started your career as a journalist and a feature writer. Yes,
I did, and I did that for 25, 30 years, and I just got tired of it.
Really?
Yeah.
So who were you writing for, and what were you writing about as a journalist?
Well, I started out at USA Today when it was started in the early 80s. I worked on the sports agate desk, which meant that I stayed up all night long and collected box scores from games all over the country.
I don't see that at all.
Yeah, that's what I did and wrote. It was during the
Did you want to do sports? Did you go
no,
to journalism?
No, it was just
sports?
A job.
Okay.
Yeah, and it was the 84 Olympics. Is that when the Olympics were in LA?
Yeah.
So I did a little bit of very short article writing about some of those events, and I stayed there for a couple years, and then moved out to California and worked for a weekly newspaper for a number of years, and then ended up, when I had my kids, decided that I didn't want to have those hours, so did some freelance writing, and then when the kids got older, worked for a magazine, and then had my own publication for a long time, and then started writing for Laguna Beach Magazine and Newport Beach Magazine, and did, I don't know, 2 or 3 years worth of feature writing for them during which time I was getting my MFA in theater.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
And you guys are MFA in Idaho. Mm-hmm. Good program?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. They have a distance delivered option. So I spent 2 years taking classes while I lived in California and went up occasionally, and then the third year actually was in residence.
How did feature writing prepare you for becoming a playwright? Seems like as a feature writer, you're constantly generating new ideas. You're constantly interviewing various types of people and individuals and getting to know sort of the human nuances of life.
Yeah, it's all about telling a story. Mm-hmm. And so in that sense, it's very much similar. I feel comfortable interviewing people, mm-hmm. much more interviewing people than being interviewed, I have to say. And so that's really thinking about character and thinking about motivation. My plays are, I have historical dramas and contemporary comedies and kind of everything in between. Mm. So that's the nice thing is that I can, just like with feature writing, you know, whatever you're writing about, you're an expert in that moment. Right. And then you can switch to something else. And so
are you a
fun.
Disciplined writer?
I am.
Every day?
Every day.
Certain hours during the day, like an 8-to-5 job, or in the mornings, in the evenings?
I tend to write best in the mornings, mm-hmm. but, you know, having kids, you just learn to kind of write while you're sitting in the car waiting for them to get out of rehearsal or some practice or some lesson or something. Mm-hmm. So I just write all the time, pretty much.
Cool. Was theater drama always there, even as you were writing, feature writing and raising your family? Was this always something kind of in the back of your mind as something you wanted to do?
Well, you know, like all kids, I did shows when I was really little, but I never had any talent on stage, mm-hmm. Even though I've been writing literally forever. Mm-hmm. And then my older daughter became interested in theater, and so I was one of those moms who had to, like, paint sets and mm-hmm. sew costumes and all that while she was doing that, And I thought it would be fun, and she used to take classes up at Idlewild in the summer. And so I was actually perusing their catalog looking for a writing class and came across a class in the 10-minute play. Oh. And I thought, oh, I can do that. You know, nice. It's only 10 minutes, and it was a weekend. And, mm-hmm. you know, so I made arrangements for the kids and went up there and wrote a 10-minute play over the weekend. And it was so much fun. Yeah. I said, oh, I want to do this again.
Great. And that's interesting.
You finished your MFA in playwriting, and now you're on the artistic staff at Laguna Beach Playhouse?
I am.
What's your role at the Playhouse?
I am, well, currently I'm the dramaturg on the show that we're in rehearsal for, which means that I am in the rehearsal room and kind of being like a potential audience member. Like sometimes the actors and the directors, they're so focused on whatever they're doing in the moment that I try to take a bigger picture view and think about issues as an audience member might think about them. I'm also there as a reference or a research reference. So if there's an element in the text that they need additional information on in terms of how to interpret a line or something, and maybe it involves some kind of research or background or context for the play, I'll do that. I write the program notes. So really my goal is to enhance the audience's experience of the play.
I think that's really interesting. We've had a couple of conversations, yes, Ava, about what is a dramaturg?
She just told it beautifully.
I know. Yeah. But so I'm really curious about that. So if someone says, I don't understand what this is. I don't understand what the playwright is trying to say here or why we would do it this way. How do you get that information? Where do you look?
I Google it. it really depends. I mean, and sometimes, you know, you're working on pieces that are older and it's a reference that, you know, I mean, maybe in the 70s it was a contemporary reference.
A period reference.
Now it's not
something.
Anymore. So then, you know, in the case of the piece that we're working on right now, we're fortunate that the playwright is alive and well and lives in Los Angeles. So if there's something we want to update, we can ask permission to do that. Sometimes it's if it's an older play, obviously we can't change it. But you know, it's helpful for the actors and the director and the designers to just have an outside voice.
Incredibly helpful as an actor to have somebody sat in the audience. An experienced person sat in the audience.
Isn't that
during rehearsal, you mean?
Because yeah. Even in the process that we've been using, you know, the first two shows that Ava and I did, it's Ava and I. And we're basically just sort of sitting there going, you know, oh, that seemed good. You know,
yeah, that
I
was good,
know.
Yeah.
I'd like to focus on you, but I'm so worried about me that it's really
hard
to do that.
Well, do I have to listen to this again? You're boring me now.
Exactly. When we were rehearsing the Reindeer monologues, I mean, literally, I would come in, plop down on a couch and go, Ava, make me laugh, please.
Yeah. The extent of his direction.
Right, but then you're working with your friend and the person that your co-actor, and is it hard to be honest in that kind of situation?
No.
No?
No, I don't think so. I think that there's, and again, it's been a while since I've worked with a director and a playwright, especially one, and I would say Lauren seems to have a tremendous amount of insight and sensitivity that she brings to the work that she's doing. And I think in the process that we've set up, I don't know if there's any right or wrong. It's just kind of what works or what doesn't work or what would work better. And it's really just sort of about sifting through choices and identifying what choices you have available to you and then deciding which of those choices you want to go for.
And certainly not being precious about any choices that you've made, because...
What do you mean, not being precious? I know it. I know what that means, but I'm not sure the audience...
You know, you've made a character choice or an emotional choice, and that's on a line, and that's how you're presenting it. But then somebody else might say, nah. That's not what I meant, or that doesn't really work. Mm-hmm. And you could be really, really stuck on the idea.
Right.
But not being precious about it is to go, okay, yeah, all right, I'll try something different.
I'll try something different.
And I think that's true for me, too, you know, to not be precious about the words. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you just write a sentence and an actor will just, their tongue will trip over it. It's just not easy to say, you know, or they don't know. It's such a long piece that they have to find some place to breathe, and if you don't give them that, then, you know, you really need to rewrite.
Faulkner called that killing your darlings, and you might have something
killing your babies,
that you really just love but doesn't work for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. Maybe it comes back later in another piece.
Right.
Well, I think the three writers here, Don, Lauren, and myself, should take a musical break, come back, and then let us read one of the scripts and see what that sounds like. I'm serious. I think that would be interesting.
I'm totally down for that.
Oh, my God.
I've never done it before, so would you be up for that?
I'll read stage directions.
No, that's no fun. All right, it was just an idea. Never mind.
I'll do it.
We'll figure it out. Yeah.
All right. Stay tuned. We'll see what we come back with after this musical break, and we're going to hear
some music.
You Make My Dreams Come
True.
You
Make My Dreams.
By Hall & Oates. Hall & Oates. KX93.5, The Friendship Show.
Well, you make a matter.
listening to Kicks 93.5. We're sitting here trying to put together a two-minute play, and we're scrambling very quickly, but Don and
my prudish Midwestern is coming out on a line or two.
Okay. Places, people, places. Okay.
Who's going to play the wind? So you want to read, how's this work?
So we can try this. But okay. I need to get to a place where I can see it.
Yep.
Okay. So this is the first page of a play called Appetite for Love, which the two characters, Don will be playing Yenta, who's a matchmaker. And
I was in Fiddler on the Roof in high school.
Oh, okay.
Well, this, your whole life has been leading to this moment.
And the man who comes in is Rick. So
I've never done anything. So
play starts out with Yenta sitting by the phone. She's waiting for a client, and the phone is not ringing.
Okay. What's the matter with you? You got a ringer or what?
She picks up the phone. There's nobody there. She puts it down. She picks it up again.
Hello, Yenta Noodles Matchmaking Service, where the women are zaftig and the men are circumcised.
She puts the phone down. It still doesn't ring. She picks it up again.
Just a minute.
There
was a knock at the door. Right?
Okay. So Rick enters. He's wearing a dark suit, dark socks, and dress shoes, and boxer shorts. He's not wearing any pants.
Hello, you must be... I saw your sign, so I thought, well, I'm here for you, you know?
A match?
Yes, right, a match. A lady.
Well, you've come to the right place. Yenta Noodle's Matchmaking Service. Yenta Noodle, at your service.
I'm Rick. Rick-o. Rick Robbins.
Rick O'Robbins? I hate to break it to you, but you're not. This is a Jewish dating service.
I'm Jewish.
Rick O'Robbins?
Rick's short for Schmedrick, or short for Osher, and Robbins is short for Robin Witz Goldberg.
We need to stop there.
Okay. And ladies and gentlemen, that is why the professionals do it.
The playwright has determined she would rather not have the piece done.
It was our first read. It was our first read.
We were editing on the spot, too, because I'll confess there was a line I wasn't willing to read.
Yeah, and I did not pronounce
it. A very funny line, which I would totally do on stage, but not on the radio.
Gotcha.
All right, so come on May 15th.
That's right. Hear what you missed.
I've got an adrenaline rush right now, though. I really do. I thought that was sort of fun. All right.
Okay.
Thank you, by the way, for allowing us to do that.
Yeah, it was
my premiere.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. And you can
see
now why when you take the 10-minute playwriting class with Lauren, at the end of it, Ava and I'll come in and read it for you. Don't worry.
Thank you.
Let me ask you, though. I mean, I was getting worked up. I mean, I felt adrenaline. I was kind of getting, like I'm going out running or something. Do you feel that way when you go on stage, or is there a process you go to sort of calm yourselves down before you go on stage?
What do you think, Ava?
Or is it a rush?
It depends where you are in the run of the play. If it's the first night, it's all about, am I going to remember my lines?
Yeah. So I have to say, the first night of Reindeer Monologues, we were a mess.
We only did one night of Reindeer Monologues.
Really? Really? It seemed like a weekend of shows.
No, it was...
Two nights.
No, we did one night because we... I don't know why. I guess it was all we could manage because we're both very busy. And we did one night and it was just a... Let's get through it.
We were
and go home.
We were a bit of a mess before that show. I would say, for me, getting up to do the show, I think there's like a process where you go through where it's like, okay, you focus on this right now and everything else, set it aside. And then to me, I think I actually work really hard to calm myself down so that you can just kind of get into the experience. But then once I'm in it, I tell you, after the show, I'm
spent.
Then I'm amped up. Where it's like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? Because I feel like I could run a marathon right now.
I remember being really surprised because when I worked at Drake University, one of our alumni was in a show on Broadway, and so I was in New York to do some donor visits, and I visited with this guy, and he we were going to meet after the show, and I thought, oh, he's going to be, it's like 11 o'clock, and I'm like exhausted and off my time zone and everything, and thinking that he's going to be exhausted too. He could have gone, I was like 1 a.m. going, yeah, and now I'm going to bed. And he was just like spinning.
Oh, yeah, I would say in my younger days when I was working as an actor, and you get off stage at 11 o'clock at night and you're amped up, and in my younger days, you'd be like, oh my gosh, that beer went down so fast. Well, because you're trying to get back down to a normal level.
But this had been, you know, like a musical with dancing and blah, 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 and I just couldn't believe he had any energy left after that. But it does, it amps you up, apparently.
All right, Ida Mae is swarming the studio
Alarm
right now.
In the house.
We gotta.
So we need to tell our listeners one more time about Mark Miller and Ava Burton in shorts at BC Space, 235 Forest Avenue. If you can't find BC Space, it's right next door to the Candy Baron. That's a good way to remember it. May 15th and 16th, 7:30 p.m. You can RSVP for tickets at lojosimon@gmail.com. These are works by Lojo and others and directed by Lojo. And it's $15 or $25 for VIP seats.
All right. I think the three of us are leaving to go have a rehearsal now, aren't we?
I think we should.
Oh, wow.
You're having a beer?
What? No, that's your show.
All right.
All right. You've been listening to The Friendship Show on KX93.5 FM. Thank you, Ava Burton, for being here.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Lauren, for being here. And we're done. We're out of here. Ida Mae and what's that show she does? Is up
Radio
next.
Honey.
Is up next.
I'm off.
You've been listening to The Friendship Show on KX93.5 FM. Join us every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. for great conversation, great music, and the chance to make great new friends. The Friendship Show on KX93.5, Laguna's only FM.